And welcome to episode, edition, whatever you want to call it, number 6 of the Howard Eskin podcast. And if you found it, you probably know what to do. You can subscribe. Obviously, when you say subscribe, people think there's a charge, no charge. And you're notified every time I do a new podcast on iTunes. So it's the, search it, the Howard Eskin podcast on iTunes, and that's how you will find it. This week, and I think I've got another great guest on the podcast, Michael Vick. Now, I know there's some dilemma, and I understand why, totally understand why, with the things that Michael Vick did before he became a Philadelphia Eagle. But I'm going to talk about things that he did afterwards and how he corrected himself. Another thing, I'll talk about that. Another subject that I will talk about, the 76ers, the cult group, and it is a cult. There's not enough cult groups in our country anymore. There are cult groups, a lot of them bad and evil. The 76ers, or I should say the 76ers / Scam Hinkie cult group, is a totally different cult group. It is amazing that they will die by the sword. The process didn't work. Well, I'm going to get into that later. And I'll tell you why I don't think the process worked. And, you know, the air came out of the room on Tuesday night. Tuesday night, the Ricky Sanchez lottery party. And people were all pumped up and they were waiting. They wanted two picks. And the worst they wanted, well, that's the best they wanted was 1 and 4. The worst they wanted is one pick and it wasn't number one. And we'll get into that as well. But two guests this week. One, a local player, football player, trying to make a team. But the Eagles signing of LeGarrette Blount may have hurt. And I'm rooting for Corey Clement, the running back out of Wisconsin who played high school football over in New Jersey. Really, really good guy. Apparently there were some issues in college and that maybe that's one of the reasons that he wasn't drafted. Good guy. You'll see he's got a really good personality and a good guy, but now with the signing, with the Eagles signing of a three-down back in LeGarrette Blount, it makes it real difficult for Corey Clement to make the team. However, and I'll get into this, if he plays well in camp in the preseason, who knows, he could be on the practice squad. But we'll start with Corey Clement, and I'll come back after Corey Clement, and then we'll talk more about Michael Vick, and then we'll play the Michael Vick interview. And then also, after Michael Vick is when I go into my Sixers rant, which I know I get all this craziness from the cult, the Sam Hinkie Sixers, the process which was dead almost from its inception, in my opinion, but we'll get into that in a little while. Okay, now let's hear from the Eagles' undrafted free agent, the running back, Corey Clement.
Here with Corey Clement, who's a local guy, who's got a jersey on that's the team he grew up watching. What's it like to put the Eagles jersey on and be here working out with this team?
I think it's every kid's dream, and I actually get a chance to live it right now. So, you know, when you look back at it, you know, all the hard work and, you know, dedication that I put forward to, you know, getting here to this location, I didn't have to go very far. I just had to go to Wisconsin, then come back to, you know, play with the green jersey. And, you know, fly, Eagle, fly is the new motto, and I can't wait to rep it, you know, once the season comes around. But, you know, right before that, I still had to put it into work and make this 53 man.
You know, I talked to your dad before the draft, and obviously you'd hoped you'd be somewhere in the first 2 days. Yeah. All right, even early in the third day. It didn't happen. Number one, what did it feel like? Because obviously you expected to be drafted.
Yeah, it sucked, and I was kind of frustrated as to really how come I didn't get picked. Am I really that bad of a player? Is somebody leaking some information that really hindered my draft stock? So, you know, a lot of things played into it, but I can't really put it out there, so it was anonymous. So at the same time, it's going to make my story that much better. You know, at the same time, I went undrafted, so now how good would it be to show up everybody else who passed me?
You know, the information, and obviously Twitter has created a lot of, as we call now, fake news. And
yeah.
What was it? Did you do anything that created this, or was it just kind of blown out of proportion? What did happen in Wisconsin?
I think everything was really blown too much out of proportion. At the same time, you got to realize the day and age that we're in, it's just a media era that's not in your favor sometimes. At the same time, you got to realize what you do is really going to be magnified that much bigger. So, you know, whatever action I do, I got to think twice about it and put myself in the best position possible.
Okay, so now you play at Wisconsin. The offense, is it easy to transform from that offense to what, you know, the Eagles do here?
Yeah, I think it's very cool. And as to, you know, how much they're going to switch up. Now, I played at the Senior Bowl. I had about 3 days to learn as much as they've thrown at us. So I think, you know, within the first day, I've obtained all the information I possibly could. So now I got to go back and study and make it that much easier for myself.
Okay, your memories. You grew up in New Jersey. Mm-hmm. You watched this football team.
Yeah.
What are some of the memories you have of the Eagles or players that you kind of really were a big fan of?
Yeah. I can name a lot. You know, you had Ty Pinkston, you had James Thrash. And,
wait a minute, you named two receivers. Really? Come on, man.
Yeah,
even though they got somewhere.
Yeah, okay, you got Brian Westbrook, you got Kirill Buchholz,
okay.
You got Deuce Staley, you got LeSean McCoy, you got Darren Sproles, you got an endless name of running backs who made their print here, and I want to be the next one. So, whatever I got to take charge, do next, and make sure somebody else later on says I want to be like him.
Okay, so you remember those guys. Do you remember games where, you know, as a fan, you're a fan, right?
Yeah.
Do you remember certain games?
I remember the Super Bowl against the Patriots, and my family's very upset that we couldn't win it. We were so
close.
Well,
they cheated. You know,
yeah,
they cheated.
They cheated. So, I mean, we were so close, but at the same time, that's the last memory I have that says that's who I want to be a part of, because I see so much potential within the Philadelphia Eagles.
You know, did you see any of the game when you were at Wisconsin? Obviously, you're playing at the same time. Did you watch the games on TV, the Eagles? I mean, obviously, they were still your
oh, yeah,
team.
Yeah, definitely.
So you never came to a game because you're playing during that season. But
yeah.
Do you remember watching games and always pulling
every
for?
Every Sunday, my dad, my brother, they were true diehard Eagles fans. So every Sunday, they had their thing on all day running. So I sat there and I just wanted to say, I wonder what it'll feel like. So now I'm in this role. So what do I do next?
Okay. Did you mention T.O.? Did you mention T.O. at all when you mentioned Thrash and Pinkston? Did you leave him out of the equation?
I didn't leave T.O. out. He was the first to mention in my first interview with the Philadelphia Eagles. So I think I got to give him some respect. You know, he's a hard worker. You know, he made an impact here and made an impact in the league. So at the same time, the NFL is hard. So you got to give respect when respect is due.
Okay. The Eagles wanted a three-down back.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you weren't a draft pick. That doesn't mean anything. Free agents have made it. Doug Peterson talked about the fact that he was and lasted 14 years in the league. So what is it that you have to do to make this team and be a Philadelphia Eagle?
Remember why I didn't get picked and have a chip on my shoulder. Know that I'm not here to make any friends. And at the same time, I got to know in the back of my mind that somebody else is trying to outwork me within this league or even in this locker room. So at the same time, know my motive and execute.
What did Deuce Staley tell you? Obviously, you talked to Deuce.
Yeah.
And that you have to do in this camp and through camp.
Got to get the special teams down first. Now, at the same time, I understand his view on that. So, if I want to stay on the team, I got to know everything I possibly can. So, not just running back. Know that you can be available for everything that you want to get through.
And you're a good pass guy. You catch the ball well?
Yeah. And I caught everything today. So, at the same time, I want to make the most of it and show why they picked me up.
All right. Your dad. When you didn't get drafted, he was probably more upset than you were, right?
Yeah, he definitely was more upset than me. But at the same time, I had to calm him down to a point to say nothing's over with. So at the same, you gotta know that your story is still being written.
And when you got the call from the Eagles, then what are you thinking?
It's game one again. So I'm very thankful. That's all I can say.
Okay, most people don't know who Dom DeSandro is. I know him.
Yeah.
And you know him.
Yeah.
What did Dom, for people that don't know, is the Eagles security guy, that big, heavy, big guy that walks off with the coach. I'm busting Dom's chops here a little bit. What did Dom mean to you? Because I know he kind of gave you some good advice throughout your life.
Yeah, he was a good resource. You know, he was somebody I wanted to look up to, and he just, you know, taught me right from wrong. And now I'm here today, and just want to build all my connections possible. You know, not with just Dom. You know, got to get in touch with the front office. You know, make everybody know like the player that they got here today. So, Dom was. Is a great friend, and I hope to continue that relationship.
Well, good luck, and I want to see some production out of you because your father just won't be able to deal with it.
Yeah,
if not.
I know. He has no other choice. I'm the one playing the game, not him.
Okay, yeah. And you'll do the right thing.
Exactly.
Corey, thanks, man. Good luck.
Appreciate it.
You know, he's a good guy. He really is a good guy.
and he's got skills, but it's going to be difficult now for him, I think, to make the team because Donnell Pumphrey will make the team. The Eagles, and I think the fans hope, there is no next Darren Sproles, but he is the next Darren Sproles. We're as close as you can be because Sproles has already said that this coming season will be his last season. So, and then there's other Wendell Smallwood they got to keep because unless Corey Clement can beat him out, and I guess that wouldn't be a shock. If Corey Clement can beat out Wendell Smallwood, he's got a shot to make the team. But remember, you can't carry too many running backs because there's so many other things that you have to make sure you have on your team. And they have to be special teams guys. So we'll see how well that Wendell Smallwood, when it comes to camp and in the preseason games, plays on special teams. And we'll see how well Corey Clement plays on teams. Corey Clement is, we'll see how good he is, but I know he's got the desire. And I can't stand the term chip on your shoulder. You know what it is? You just want to prove. You want to prove that you're a better back and you should have been drafted somewhere in the NFL draft. All right, so we'll see what happens there. All right, Michael Vick, interesting guy. He's living in the Fort Lauderdale area right now. He's changed his life around. And I'm going to get into that a little bit more after we hear from Michael Vick. He really has changed his life around. Hey, listen, I didn't like Michael Vick when he came, and I can tell you that right now. And I told Michael Vick that. We didn't talk for a while, and then we had a discussion among each other, and I said I'd start from scratch. And he really was nice to people. He tried to help people. He changed his life. Being in jail for 2 years, losing $100 million can change all that. But it did change his life, and he's working with kids, and he's trying to do better things now with his life. And who knows, someday, and he talks about trying to, and I'll talk about it when we're done, when we hear from Michael Vick. He wants to be back in the NFL. In some way, shape, or form, he wants to be back in the NFL. All right, let's hear now from Michael Vick. All right, I'm here with former Eagles quarterback, and let me run down the teams. Atlanta, the Jets, and Pittsburgh. Is that right? Michael Vick.
That's correct.
Pittsburgh the last one, right? Pittsburgh was the last team you played for?
Yeah, Pittsburgh being the last thing.
Yeah, okay. All right, Mike, so tell me, I mean, it's been a while. What's going on with you right now?
Well, right now I'm just, doing football camps for the kids in 11 different cities over the next 3 months and trying to give them that opportunity to, dream that dream. I know a lot of kids anticipate one way or another, playing on the collegiate level, maybe playing in the National Football League one day. And I'm just trying to make myself visible and give them that experience. I think it's important.
And the you told me when we talked the other day that you had surgery. I think it's the only one you've had. Explain the surgery.
Yeah, well, I had surgery on my right ankle. I broke my right ankle in 2003. And it healed well, but I never fully recovered and got my range of motion back. And by me having the 2-year layoff, I was never able to get it corrected. So when I came back to the Philadelphia Eagles, I just had to go. And there was no time for surgery. I was in quarterback competitions and trying to compete and trying to still prove that I can play. So I just kind of gutted it out the last couple years of my career. But now I had a chance to clean it up and make it all right. Just had a chance to have a long layoff, and it just feels good to have that time off and be able to get my body back to 100%.
Okay, so you're telling me you played with an ankle that for how many years wasn't right? How many years wasn't your ankle right?
From 2009 to 2015, to my last season. I struggled with it. I never complained about it. A doctor in Pittsburgh told me if I came back to Pittsburgh, they would clean it up during that offseason because it would make me a better player, bring back, some of the old Mike Vick, so to speak, in a sense. But I would have loved to have seen that, but it was just something that I had to get done, and I had a chance to do it now, going through a lot of the NFL benefits programs and taking advantage of that, and should be back to 100% in the next, 2 months or so.
All right. So there has been always a word that Mike Vick is going to try to make a comeback. Is that still in your plans?
Yeah, well, I've thought about it, talked it over with my wife in terms of, you know, a recommitment, because that's what it's going to be if you're going to try to come back and play in the National Football League. You have to be committed. You have to be 100% in mentally. And if I just find the urge to regain that focus, then maybe I'll try to give it a shot. But as of right now, I'm enjoying my time with my family. I enjoyed last season being a spectator, watching, you know, a lot of young superstars and older veterans, you know, a la Tom Brady and Matt Ryan, just have good, you know, good games and good competition. That's what I enjoy. So I was more excited about that than anything. And, you know, hopefully down the road, if something changes, then, you know, maybe I can at least come back and try to fight for a job.
Well, and that, it doesn't sound like because of the surgery that it would be this year. It would be in the future if you did it. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's been a future. Look, I think I'm blessed as an athlete with the type of talent that I had and the body that I still possess. I think being 38 years old, I can still, you know, be a good quarterback if I wanted to. Now, it all is all to be determined, but I have to let God lead me in that situation and see what the feel is in the next year or so.
Part of your skills, obviously, was your speed. Do you at this and you're what 30 what 34?
No, I'm 36.
36,
37.
Oh, I'm trying to give you a few years. Man, I'm just
until people pull up the bio.
Yeah, until people pull up the bio, but you can't. I mean, it's the way the body works. You cannot have the same speed, and obviously that was a big part of your game.
Yeah, that was a big part of my game, and I don't expect to come back and be lightning fast. But I do have more range of motion in my ankle, which was a reason why I didn't continue to excel, I think, in my career in the latter stages. Now, I would also say, you know, it takes a certain level of focus, and I kind of lost that edge because I wasn't used to being a backup. I wasn't used to playing that role. I didn't understand how to play that role and, you know, what it all entailed. You know, I was used to being a starter. So a lot of things played a factor in what I felt in my walk of life at that moment. And I just felt like it was important just to, you know, kind of take a break. You know, even though things didn't fall, you know, in place the way I wanted it to, you know, I just felt like, you know, it was time to just kind of walk away and get away from it and rethink things.
Mike, when you see the NFL now, and let's be honest, the number of quarterbacks that aren't good enough, and I'll go the other way, there's not enough good quarterbacks. Does it make you want to come back more because you see there's just not enough quarterbacks to go around in the NFL?
Yeah, well, that's, you know, it's always been the case that it's just not going to be enough good ones. I mean, out of 32, you're going to have 20 that's solid. And a couple other guys just out there just trying to win games. And, you know, it's not a league where it's easy to win. So, you know, I think at the end of the day, quarterbacks are measured on wins and losses. And if you can continue to find ways to win, regardless of what it takes or how it looks, then you're going to be at the top of the totem pole. And if not, then you'll fade out the league just like everybody else. So it's just a tremendous amount of competition. You got to be up to the task week in and week out.
Yeah, but when you see the quarterbacks that come out of college, occasionally you see a good one. But now this is my perspective, and I'm going to ask you yours. It doesn't seem like there's enough good ones to come out of college to fill the amount of teams in the NFL. What do you think about the quarterbacks that come out of college now?
I think it's basically because of the systems that they're in. You look at a guy like Jared Evans from Virginia Tech who had phenomenal numbers. I think 38 touchdown passes to 8 interceptions and maybe 9 rushing touchdowns. He didn't even get drafted. And I think it's because of the systems. And, you know, as a quarterback, you have to find or a way to be in the right system, or it's not up to the player, which is unfortunate. It's up to the coaches and the administration to find the right players to fit what the coach's schemes are. And if that doesn't match up, then things just become, you know, hazardous. It becomes hasty. You can't function. You know, you're not being yourself, and you got to find ways to win games in whatever way it takes, so whether it's offense or defense. So I think it's just about matching the right coordinators up with the right quarterbacks and finding that chemistry.
You know, it's amazing. I talked to, I talked to Matt Ryan at the Super Bowl, but we talked last year. He's got a golf tournament up here. And obviously good guy, and I'm sure you know him. But he said it took him at least a year and a half to get comfortable playing in the system, and he was a pro-style quarterback. He didn't play that way at Boston College at times, but it was tough for him. How tough was it for you, and how tough is it for people, which can create some failure before you even have success?
Well, it's extremely tough when you first step into the league because the game is so much faster. The fact that you're trying to think through a system and trying to make good decisions throughout the course of a game is tough enough. And then you have guys on the opposing side making good decisions, reacting well, putting themselves in a position to make plays. For me, that was the biggest adjustment, learning to play the game at the speed that it needed to be played. And a lot of guys came in and did it well, but a lot of those guys was complemented by good defenses. And if you don't have that, then the flaws are going to show because as a young quarterback, you're going to make mistakes. It's all in how can they be compensated for on the other side of the ball.
Did you know Matt Ryan well?
Coming out?
Well, at any point in your life or in your career, did you get to know Matt Ryan?
Well, I met Matt at the Pro Bowl in 2010. And we hit it off like, you know, we had known each other for years. So, you know, we always had a chemistry. We always had a good friendship. And I always enjoyed watching him play. I always thought he did some phenomenal things early in his career. And it really impressed me, the fact that he was a rookie and took his team to the playoffs.
When you look at the Super Bowl, I know Tom Brady's all that, and everybody gets all excited about Tom Brady. I don't know if the Patriots won. What's that?
I say I get excited about Tom, too. So.
Okay, well, that's great, but normal. I don't think the Patriots won that game. I think the Falcons lost that game. That's just the way I look at it. I felt so bad for Matt Ryan because it's so hard to get there. When you were, and I don't know if you watched the game, but when you saw what happened in that game, did you feel for him a little bit more?
I was just in total shock because, you know, being up 28-3 and in a position to score, whenever the score was, when they had an opportunity to pretty much run the ball and, you know, seal the game, you know, you just kind of think what happened from that point. And it was two great teams, by far the best two teams in the league last year. And they both had their moments. And it was about who had the best moments and the moments at the right time. And I think Tom Brady and the New England Patriots just made more plays in the end. And I think Atlanta's defense was gassed. And I think this is something that they're going to be able to learn from and push forward and be a good football team moving forward. I'm really excited to watch them.
How much have you seen Carson Wentz, and what do you think about him?
I had a chance to watch Carson Wentz on several occasions last year. I thought he displayed competitiveness and a lot of toughness, which is what you have to have in the NFC East. You got to be gritty. You got to be willing to week in and week out be at the top of your game because the one thing about Philadelphia, the fans won't allow you to not be off your game. He handled that part well, and I think this year he has to improve, like any other quarterback who's young. And I look forward to watching his progress. I think he has tremendous upside.
What are your memories? I mean, it's hard to not understand the fans here once you get here. But before you got here and once you got here, and obviously there was different circumstances, what did you understand about the fans, the Eagles fans in Philadelphia?
Well, having to face Philly in the NFC Championship game in 2004, that season, and in 2002, I think, in the divisional playoffs, I knew what we was walking into was the Lions then. It was a place where they don't like the opposing teams, and they could not like their team if seen fit. They just want to win, and they display a certain amount of toughness that you learn to appreciate. And I've certainly, over the years, learned to appreciate it. I didn't like it at times, but I appreciated it because it brought out the best in me and it kept me on my A game on so many occasions.
Well, everybody gets booed. Carson Wentz hasn't got booed yet, but he's still on a honeymoon. But everybody gets booed. Everybody gets booed in Philadelphia. You have your moments?
Don't boo the young guy. Not yet.
Did you have your – no, not yet. Did you have your moments when you got booed here?
I think I had my moments where we got booed as an offense. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And maybe a lot of those boos was intended for me. I was the guy behind the center, so I take total responsibility. But, you throw a pass and it's over the guy's head, you get booed. You throw a pass and the receiver drops it, you get booed. If LeSean was running and we was in dire straits during the 2012 season and he fumbled, he got booed. It just wasn't a pleasant time, but at the same time, those memories are still awesome.
Is there a play, and I'm pretty sure you were the quarterback in the playoffs, and I can remember a play. Is there a play or plays that you still to this day, when you think back on what you did in your career, that you say, I wish I had that back?
It was a play against Pittsburgh when I was playing with the Pittsburgh Steelers last year, or the year before. I trusted Antonio Brown, and me and Antonio Brown was working on trust. And out of all the plays that I've had that I've taken, I've wanted to have back, this is probably the most memorable moment. Antonio Brown had a go route, and Martavis Brown had a go route as well. And the entire time I'm telling myself, even though Antonio's on Patrick Peterson, I'm still going to give him a chance if it's one-on-one coverage. I drop back, eyes down the field. I'm looking at Martavis, looked like he's coming open. I let it go to Martavis. I turn and look at Antonio to see what position he was in, and Patrick Peterson had failed, and he was running down the field by himself. And I second-guessed myself in that situation, and that's when I kind of realized that, it was time for me to step away from the game for a while because I never really did that. And we would have had a touchdown and been in a comfortable position, comfortable lead, and my decision-making didn't dictate that. So, yeah, that's probably the most memorable moment in my career, I guess it's because the memory is so vivid, where I can just say, I wish I had that moment back. But there was plenty more as well.
Was there one in Philadelphia that you could think about?
Let me see. Playing Philly, when I was playing for Chip Kelly, it was a play against San Diego, and we played them the second game of the season. It was a shootout, barn burner, and we was running one of our read option plays, and it was me, Eric Weddle, and LeSean McCoy, all in a box in a space. And Eric bit down on LeSean, and I could have pulled the ball and ran right into the end zone. And I didn't pull it. I gave it to LeSean. He stopped LeSean for a two-yard loss. We end up kicking a field goal. And if you look at the play on film, it was a walk-in. I would have walked in. Eric Weddle had bit on the fake where he grabbed LeSean because he was terrified of him getting the ball, and he just forgot about me. And that could have changed the course of my season at the time. We would have been 2-0 going into Kansas City that weekend as opposed to 1-1. Just more pressure.
Mike, the players coming out of college nowadays have had some issues. Guys, this year, it happens every year. Have you either have thought about or talked to players, and what kind of advice, and obviously you had problems, what kind of advice would you give players?
Young players coming out, I was just telling them, just stay focused. Like, get through the first realm of your career, the first 4 years, which is very important, which dictates if you make it through the next four. And you got to look at the NFL in stages, and I always say that. You got to get through that first contract if you want to be relevant. If you want to continue to stay relevant, you got to get through a second one. And, that takes a certain level of focus. If you don't have that focus, then you won't reach those years and you won't enjoy the whole experience of playing in the NFL. That can get cut short very quickly from a decision that could be made from a person of high authority on the coaching staff. So you have to focus. You can't miss a beat. You got to be accountable and strive to be a leader. And that's what I would tell him.
You know, I don't know, and I'm not going to ask you because I don't know that you'd give me an answer. There's a lot of guys that would smoke dope in the NFL. All right.
Yeah.
You know, you blow a joint, okay. It happens. But how can you do it weeks before the combine when you know you're going to be tested? What is a player thinking about when you – hey, listen, you can wait until after the combine and you can do whatever the hell you want. But how does a player – have that irresponsibility when you're going for what could be a good career?
It's just, I think it's more so lack of knowledge, but I also think you have some players who come from different backgrounds who come with different attitudes and just don't care, and they don't understand the opportunity that they have at the present, and they take it for granted. And you know, at some point it's going to be detrimental to their careers because I think it's going to be heavier restrictions and more punishment. Now, I would say maybe a seminar needs to be had, you know, early when the guys first declare, just so they know the ramifications of everything and they don't get caught in bad situations. You know, they have to be educated on it as well.
You know, your thoughts on, and I know guys get in trouble. Joe Mixon, I don't know what your thoughts on. And obviously, I talked to Charles Barkley last week, and he had a couple of points. And he said he thinks he should get another chance, which he obviously did with the Cincinnati Bengals. Your thoughts on Joe Mixon?
I wish Joe Mixon the best, and I hope he learned from his mistake because Ray Rice never got another opportunity to play after doing something that was just devastating in the eyes of pretty much 99.9% of the public. So he has to understand that he's been blessed. I think every night he goes to sleep, he needs to look up in the sky and pray and say and thank God, you know, for the opportunity. Like I said, if he was a guy who was in the sixth, seventh year of his career, he wouldn't have got the opportunity. The fact that he had talent, and he has talent, and people are willing to, you know, work with young men and rehabilitate him is what he should be most proud about. So he just needs to be humble, like I said before, and take everything in stride and do everything in his power to be a philanthropist in that area. Because he failed in that area.
You know, Charles Barkley said that when he smoked marijuana, all he wanted to do was eat potato chips. he said all it did was make
Sir
him
Charles.
All it did was make him hungry. You know, obviously at a point in your career, you did it, but I don't think you ever tested positive. So you just you do it, but you understand what your responsibility is. Is that what you have to do?
You just have to make sure that your team comes first. Mm. And if you don't, then you won't be a guy that's out on the field being accountable. You lose out on so many opportunities. And I think we have to look at Martavis Bryant's situation. You know, he's been given numerous opportunities, and this is by far his last. So if he don't straighten out, or if the kids don't get it in the beginning, and eventually they will, because they won't be playing in the National Football League and they won't be able to, you know, control their legacy. And, you know, being honest, the splendor that comes along with being a professional football player. So those are the things that you risk.
Mike, the one thing that I noticed about you when you were here in Philadelphia, obviously you changed. You changed from what I know that the situations that you had in Atlanta, and you understood it. You were good with the media. You went out and you spoke to people and you talked to people, and you became, and I say this, and obviously people understand what you went through, you became good to people. What was it, and I know you've talked about this openly, that time you spent in prison, did that help you do that, or did you realize how badly that you screwed up?
Yeah, I realized how bad I screwed up. And when you're sitting in the jail cell, you think about the things that you lost because of irrational decisions. You can't do anything but hang your head. the fortunate part for me was that I had people like Arthur Blank and Roger Goodell and Tony Dungy, Andy Reid, who wanted to, you know, push for me to get another opportunity. My agent, Joel Siegel, was in my corner every step of the way. They didn't agree with what I did, but they was willing to help me rehabilitate myself. And I think before anything, I had to be committed to rehabilitating myself. And it started in the place in Leavenworth. And it changed me. And my example is for kids who grew up knowing my story and want to stay away from any hardships that they may obtain, which may be self-inflicted. I think they need to pay attention to that, pay attention to my story, my walk, and avoid it. You know, avoid it. That's the most important thing.
So when you were in prison, and I think it was 2 years, did you think about that many days and think about what you had done and then what you were going to do? You changed when you were in prison?
It was all about making amends, I think, at the end of the day. And leading up to the point where I'm at in my life now, I'm about to do some great things with my own organization. That'll be a nonprofit organization, which will be catered to animal welfare. Announcement to be made down the road. I'm super excited about it because, you know, being retired and away from the game, this is something that I don't have to do, but I will continue to lend my time to. And it can be my own. So I'm expecting to get a lot of support. I know people, you know, care about the welfare of animals, and I'll continue to educate kids as I go through my walk, you know, with my football camps and combines, which can be, you can sign up at B7Elite.com.
Okay, I'm going to write this down. I'm going to repeat it to B7Elite.com.
The B7PlaymakersElite.com.
Okay, B7Elite. Playmakers.com?
I'm sorry, V7PlayMakersElite.com.
Okay, let's try it. V7
PlayMakersElite.com.
Okay.
Yeah. It's just about educating the kids and continuing to help them grow mentally and physically and as a student athletes, which will help the game, you know, on the collegiate level and NFL level down the road. I'm pushing so these kids can come in and be willing to make the proper decisions to make the game a better game. That's what's important, the future of the game.
Mike, what did Andy Reid mean to you? Obviously giving you a second chance, but it just seemed like there was more to it with Andy Reid than just being the head coach.
Yeah, with Andy, he really just instilled discipline all the time. I spent so much time at Andy's office once I became a starter. We had so many meetings together. I mean, when I was, you know, when I started playing and took over for Kevin, we met continuously all the time. And it wasn't always about football. It was about, you know, my overall well-being. What did I have going on? Where was I going to speak? What kind of endorsement deals was I getting into? Was I doing too much? Did I need to scale back? It was just meetings that, like, I didn't always want to have, and I always wanted to go because I thought he was just one of the most engaging men I ever met in my life. And, you know, very, very smart man. And I just wanted to pick his brain and talk to him. I enjoyed talking to him. So I took everything with a grain of salt, but he changed me as a man to help me see life different and what was important.
So if you look at a couple of football people, Tony Dungy, obviously very important in your life, and Andy Reid. Sounds like he was important in your life as well.
Yeah, I had two of the best. I mean, that's a blessing within itself. So I know the knowledge, the things that they taught me, I can take that and be a servant to a lot of other kids and the masses of people. So if I can continue to do that, then I'm still doing a good deed in life. And, you know, they helped me, you know, see these visions, help them come true, and made me believe that I can make them come true. Most importantly,
Mike, at one time, I know when we spoke, you talked about coaching. If you don't play again, and obviously you say there is a chance that you would try to come back at some point.
Slim chance.
Slim chance, is that what you just said?
Yeah, man. I just enjoy the game for what it is now. I love watching the young guys, too. I think the league is constantly changing, and I think growth is always going to be an issue. The younger league is always going to be an issue, and I respect it. I really do.
All right, so with that the case, would you like to coach? Would you like to try to get back in the NFL in some way in coaching?
Yeah, absolutely. I think spending so many years in that same regimen, being a player, I could see myself doing it on the other side and being a coach and being a good one at that. That'll be my focus. That'll be my primary goal, to be the best coach that I can be, just like I try to be the best player that I can be. And excitement is working with the kids, watching their practice, watching them grow, watching them get better, watching them win, gain confidence. Those are things that I want to be a part of. And at the end of the day, I still get to chase the championship with another group of coaches, with another team and another organization, if God blesses me with that opportunity.
You know, I know you mentioned, and I don't know if you can share it, that Andy Reid had talked to you about doing something with the Chiefs.
Yeah, well, he just wanted to get my thoughts, but I didn't, you know, we haven't talked about it since. I don't know. I told Coach Earl, you know, I'll think about it, you know, and, you know, just see how the summer goes, because I got a lot going on. But if I can coach with anybody, I would love to start out with Andy, you know, if that was an opportunity. You know, obviously, yeah, we love to work with the Falcons as well. So we'll just see how it goes.
You know, there's programs for players that aren't playing anymore. And obviously, you would think about getting into one of those programs where you could work with an NFL team.
Yeah, I'm seriously considering it. It's something that I really want to do. The NFL was pretty much my life, took care of me, allowed me to live the life that I live now, and I'm very thankful. So this can be my give back.
You know what, there's Deuce Staley, I believe, was an intern for the Eagles, and I think there's coaches in the NFL that went through some of these internships and went into the NFL. That's obviously the path that you could take as well, correct?
I think that's the path that I'm going to try to take. And be totally committed, take it serious, be willing to put in the hours and the extra time, because it's a lot of hard work. And once I'm ready to commit myself to it, I'm going to do it. And I think it all started with an internship at some point. So we'll see how I go.
All right, Mike. It's fun talking. It's fun kind of thinking back to some of the things, the good things that happened. Obviously, some of the things that you want to forget, but I guess what you have to do is learn from those mistakes, and there's always a positive out of every negative is the way I look at things sometimes. Do you kind of look at it that way too?
Yeah, you got to be willing to accept it, and, you know, life goes on, and you can't wake up every day pouting about the things that you didn't do right. I think you got to refocus and try to figure out what you're going to do right, and that's my philosophy. That's the way I go about life. That's what I tell the kids. When I talk to them and give them the opportunity to speak. And I continue to preach that until my last day on this earth. So I'm excited about having the opportunity to share my story with so many kids and help them grow into the players and individuals that I know they want to become, they can become.
When kids see you, they still – obviously they know the problems, but you explain the problems, but they still look up to you, right?
Yeah, they do. They do. And, you know, regardless if I'm in the mall or in the restaurant or – you know, in the clothing store, people, they recognize and they still, you know, acknowledge and pay homage, and I appreciate that. And, you know, without the fans, you won't be anything. And that's why I always continue to try to support them, and because they support me. So I always spend my time, and I'm always open and approachable.
All right. Well, it's V7PlayMakersElite.com, and that's
going to
be our foundation. All right.
Yep.
And, well, you can call me Howard. I know you're trying to show a little respect. You're one of the few people that show me respect, Mike.
Well, you get it now. I can't say 5 years ago, but you get it now.
All right, thanks, man. Hey, and I'll be talking to you. Stay in touch, and I'll stay in touch with you. And good luck, whatever it is that you do down the road, good luck. Thanks.
All right, thanks.
He is doing better things. Michael Vick clearly is doing better things. And he will... at some point, somewhere, probably be back in the NFL, because he's still loved by a lot of people, disliked tremendously by a lot of people because of what he did with the dog fighting. That was just, it was disgraceful. It was disgusting. It was wrong. It was everything about it was just nauseating and disgusting. But he learned. It's just, I think some guys, when they get a second chance, can make it, make something out of it. And some guys, for instance, you can take Greg Hardy. He got 3 and 4 chances, and he didn't make anything out of it because he could play. Michael Vick could play, and he got a chance. And Andy Reid really gave him a chance. And I think there's a point, and there's a point where I believe, and Michael Vick didn't come out and say it. I think he'll take an internship with Andy Reid in Kansas City. Andy Reid would love to have him come out there. He's kind of a savior. It was interesting to hear that Michael Vick was in Andy Reid's office a lot. Andy Reid made sure that he stayed in the straight, in a straight line, and didn't deviate from that line and didn't do anything that was stupid, because there was zero tolerance both by the Eagles and by the NFL. And I know the commissioner was involved in situations with Michael Vick to make sure that he always did the right things, and he kept a check on him. But I got over, I mean, when you think back to what he did, it's hard to get over, but there's so many things. And I saw when he was with the Philadelphia Eagles, when they asked him to do something, he was great. When he had to deal with the media, he didn't blow them off like some players want to do. He was terrific. Now, he was required to go out twice a month in community service events, and he was required to do that, to talk to kids. But he did it. He didn't have any excuses. And that was really, from Michael Vick's standpoint, it showed me a little something, but he learned. And it's so much easier to do the right things than to do the wrong things. And I don't know that he'll play again. He said it's a slim chance. I know he still has that hope. The ankle surgery obviously slows him down for this year. And I don't know, with being out, basically being out of football, it's going to be hard for him to come back. But obviously he holds out that hope. But as he said, slim, slim chance. I think it's a very slim chance. But to work for a team, be interesting to see what he does with Andy Reid. It's interesting that he remembers plays. You know, he can identify plays where he didn't do the right thing when he looked back at the tape and he saw the results of the play. But I gave Michael Vick a second chance after I spoke to him, and now totally after I see what he's done and what he's done in the community, I have totally given Michael Vick a second chance. I hope he makes it. He's really become a pretty cordial guy. And he's got to live down something that's just so, so awful. And he's got to live it down, and he's trying to do the best he can. All right, let me get into, and I know that it's impossible. It's impossible to talk to these hinky lovers, the sons of scam, as I called them. I passed out Kool-Aid for all the people that continue. They're so stupid. Some of these people are so stupid. You know, I had Kool-Aid there. They said, what's a Kool-Aid for? What's a Kool-Aid for? Because you've been drinking it for 4 years with Scam Hinky. But let me explain this process. I saw the air come out of the room when the Sixers got the third pick. Obviously, that's not what the fans wanted. There's no question with the first two. Lonzo Ball would have been the second pick, even though you had to deal with his father. And it would have been great for the people in Philadelphia to listen to his father go off on everybody. Including the team, and scream at the coach and scream at management. But that is not happening. But the third pick, there's questions. And I think there's questions by the Sixers. The first pick, there's no question. Fultz is the first pick by the Celtics. How about the Celtics? You know, when Joel Embiid said, you know, Cleveland's going to go down and we're going to go up. Well, there's two things you got to think about. It's not about Cleveland anymore. It's really more about the Boston Celtics. They get the first pick in the draft, and they get the first pick from the Nets next year. They really are set. They've got a core group of players. and you say with the first pick, how are they going to take a point guard with Isaiah Thomas? Isaiah Thomas is going to cost them $200 million if in fact, they had to re-sign him after next season. And who knows if they could trade him? Now, it'd be hard to trade him after this season, but depending on what you could get. And don't think teams look at everything, especially before the season, because if he's with a team for the whole season, but who knows at the trade deadline what you could get. It is depending on how Fultz develops, and that's who the first pick will be. But you have to worry about the Celtics. And he also said, you know, the Sixers are on their way up. He's got to play at least 60 games. He's got to play at least 65 games. And he's got to play more than 30 minutes a game. We're talking about Joel Embiid. We don't know what Ben Simmons is yet. We know he's very gifted. We know he's a terrific athlete. I don't think he has the desire of Joel Embiid. Joel Embiid is an absolutely terrific player if he's healthy. I'll never question that. The other thing I wanted to tell people, hey, listen, now that you have a basketball mind running the 76ers and not a guy that just looks at his computer all day long, I think there will be better choices made. Because when you break it down, the process with Sam Hinkie failed. When you play a lottery, you play the Pennsylvania lottery, the New Jersey lottery, you want to finish number one. They've only finished number one in one of those four years. They only finished number one once. And when you start, and you can talk about all the good players in the draft, I get it. But there's nobody that sticks out like one and two. They wanted number one. They wanted to get the Lakers pick as well, and that didn't work out. And Brian Colangelo, the day after the draft, talks about, well, we got Sacramento's number one, somebody else's number one in 2018. You got a first-round pick. Oh, the Lakers pick in 2018. You got the Sacramento first-round pick in 2019. That's great. He talks about he's got to stop that and talk about the future. And I get it. But where is the future become now? Where is now the future? And I think it would be disgusting if the Sixers raised ticket prices when they've raised them every year and they tried to lose. They should give a discount on tickets this year because of what you suffered through. That would be a real public relations coup. But Josh Harris and Scott O'Neill, the spin doctor, are all about the money. All about the money. All about the cash. But here's how the process in 4 years produced a 75-253 record. Can you imagine that? Has anybody played that stretch of basketball? Any team in the NBA and been that bad in the history of the NBA? That's like 20-some percent winning percentage. It's a disgrace. It's an absolute disgrace. That's a disgrace. And when Brian Colangelo said they had the biggest jump in games won from the previous year, well, of course they did. They had a 10-win season. You go from 10, it's like going from 0 to 1. It's like a nobody trying to become a somebody. Anything. If you go from 0 to 1, that's 50%. I don't want to hear that they had an 18-game jump. They still had a terrible record. They still won only 28 games. 28 games they won. 28 games. It is unbelievable what they have done and what they have not done. And what they have not done is succeed. They have not succeeded. And this is what I don't understand, why people totally don't understand what's going on here. How can you not understand this? I'm not going to buy into the process because it failed. It failed. All right, let me give you the players. And I've said this many times, but I want to reiterate this for all the people that believe this. All right, the first draft, they got Nerlens Noel, and they got nothing for him in a trade. Don't blame that on Brian Colangelo. He had no value. He wanted too much money for who he was. He got Michael Carter-Williams, which now is pushed off another year on what that pick can be. And if it's not better than the 11th pick, especially in today's world of the NBA, then it failed. So we'll see what happens with the Lakers next year. Then you got Joel Embiid. who hasn't played a full season of basketball in his life. In his life, he has not played a full season. He's got to play a full season. And a full season really is 70 games. And he's got to play more than 30 minutes a game. You got to take the minutes restrictions off because that's a total joke. Joel Embiid is a star. No question. If he's healthy, and I'm on board with that. Hey, listen, I want to see them win because to cover a bad team all these years, I remember a championship. I was at a champ when they won. I was actually at two championships that the 76ers won. And it was great and it was exciting. And even when Larry Brown took them to the finals, and these people are ripped Larry Brown because of Larry Hughes' draft pick. Stop it. Without Larry Brown, that season, without Larry Brown, Allen Iverson would not have been the same player he is, or he was. And they would not have gotten to the finals in that year in, 2001 when they went. And they actually won the first game against the Lakers. It was unbelievable. I mean, just the passion, just the things that happened that year were great. And that's what you want. Right now, you can say what you want, but you'd rather be the Celtics. Now, I don't think they're going to get to the finals, but who knows? But they've got an exciting team, and they can only get better next year. They got an exciting team, and they've got a core, and they've got a basketball person running. Here's the difference in the NBA. The Golden State Warriors, one with a basketball guy at the top. I know that Jerry West is not listed as a general manager, but his influence with the picks is monumental with the Golden State Warriors. None of those picks were in the top five. Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, and Draymond Green. None in the top five. So you don't necessarily need top five picks to win. And you don't necessarily need the number one pick to win. And the third pick, who knows what the third pick is? And there have been, if you look at all sports, a third pick in some drafts have been really good. And in some drafts, they've been more have been bad than have been good. But Jerry West is a basketball guy. Danny Ainge is a basketball guy. In Cleveland, LeBron coming back. Remember, they didn't win because they got the number one pick with LeBron. He left, and they wouldn't have won with Kyrie Irving. They had a general manager that's done a nice job, and LeBron James forces them into things. Otherwise, he threatens to leave. So, but it's basketball people at the top. San Antonio, it's basketball people that make the choices for the team. It's basketball people. And that's when you look at the NBA, that you need a basketball person. Sam Hinkie is a Wall Street guy that's great with numbers because he Mickey Moused them around, but you need basketball people. And we'll see whether Brian Colangelo is a good enough basketball person. But he grew up as a basketball person. Everybody uses analytics, but you can't overdo it. There's an eye test. There's a lot of things that go into that. And the process failed because, and I said this before, instead of MCW in that draft, you could have gotten the Greek Freak three picks later. The Greek Freak with Milwaukee is a flat out stud. And I don't want to hear, 14 teams passed on him. I don't want to hear all that because it's not my job. It's not your job. The other teams obviously made some kind of mistake. Not a drastic mistake, but there's teams that made a mistake. The Sixers clearly made a mistake. So you could have had the Greek Freak. If you didn't take Okafor, he's a total stiff. A total stiff and a horrible pick, and took Porzingis. Think about where you'd be if you had, and the process would have been fine, whatever that process was. You would have had the Greek Freak, Joel Embiid, and Porzingis. All fits for a team that could have been better. You wouldn't have had Ben Simmons, but you wouldn't have needed Ben Simmons. There's so many things that could have happened which people really need to understand. And I don't think they do, but I don't think they want to. We'll see. It'll all play out. We'll see how it all plays out. And again, I'm rooting for the 76ers. And I think you've got to just let Sam Hinkie go, move on. And I don't want to hear if the Sixers are successful, it was Sam Hinkie. And if the Sixers fail, it's Brian Colangelo. He had to clean up this mess. He still has to get rid of Okafor. He has to clean up this mess. He has to clean up a team that didn't fit. And you can't have it both ways. You can't have Well, if they win, that was Sam Hinkie. And if they don't win, it's Brian Colangelo's fault. Come on, people. You got to get over it. Let's all move on. And they buried the process. They hoisted that ridiculous banner at Xfinity Live. The whole thing was, I'll say this. It was a great event, and I will say that. It was a great event. A lot of people came together and united for the same reason. It was packed. I was there. I came out there among the cult group of people. It was a great event. My son obviously doesn't understand the way to build a basketball team, but he does understand how to throw a party, and that's what he did. All right, we'll be back again next week, but hopefully you enjoyed Corey Clement, you enjoyed Michael Vick, and we'll have another good one next week, I promise you, as the Howard Eskin podcast continues. Again, go to iTunes. You can subscribe on iTunes, and it will notify you when the podcast pops up. And I will also tweet it out when it's up, and I will also put it on Facebook, and I'll put the link on there too, and you can subscribe if you choose to do so. All right, everybody, enjoy it. Have a good one. I'd say let's go Sixers, but I know we still got some time with that. And the Eagles, I think, getting the running back, LeGarrette Blount. We'll talk about that next week. And then the next episode, we'll talk about how he fits. We'll hear from some Eagles people when the OTAs go into place. And I got to mention one more thing about Brandon Graham. That story was total nonsense. Total nonsense. And Brandon Graham shoved it right up the rear end of that writer. As Brandon Graham called it, fake news. He was never going to hold out. The agent never talked to Howie Roseman about a new contract. My sources are legit, and I don't take bits and pieces and just speculate. But Brandon Graham obviously is in. He never planned to stay out. So we'll look at the Eagles a little more closely next week when they start the OTAs. Everybody have a great week. And we'll talk to you again sometime next week.